Nonlinear sigma models and supergroups, and more specifically about the current algebra that is realized in these models. And I already wrote the plan, so today I will give an introduction and some motivation to study these models. And then I will show how to compute this current algebra. And finally, I will say something about integrability of these models. And then in the second lecture on Friday, I'll try to explain how we can use this current algebra to compute at least partially the spectrum of these theories. So this is work done in collaboration with Sujay Ashok and Jan Trost. Okay, so let me begin with the introduction. So of course, feel free to ask as many questions as you want. This is, at least I will try to make it pedagogical so that you can follow every step. And so please ask if there is something that is not clear. So the main motivation for, at least for me, to study these models is to study string theory in anti de Sitter backgrounds with Ramon-Ramon fluxes. And of course, we want to study string theory in such backgrounds because what we have in mind is the ADS-CFT correspondence. And it would be nice to be able to study and use this correspondence, at least from the gravity side, in a regime in which gravity is not necessarily classical. So in a regime in which we have some control on the alpha prime correction and also maybe the G-string correction. Okay. So let me say a few words about string theory in Ramon-Ramon backgrounds. So it is well known that it's quite difficult to quantize string theory when you have Ramon-Ramon fluxes. In particular, it is difficult to write worksheet couplings between the Ramon-Ramon fluxes and the worksheet fields. So that's say the main obstacle. So one solution is to embed space-time into a superspace, and then it becomes much simpler to write down couplings with these Ramon-Ramon backgrounds. So that's usually the first step. Then the worksheet theory . So it's a two-dimensional conformal field theory that is roughly built from two systems. So the first system is a sigma model on the relevant superspace. And then you have a second piece in this conformal field theory, which is the Gauss system. And there is no reason why these two systems shouldn't be coupled, at least in these superspaces. And if you really want to do string theory, on top of that, you have to add some constraints that will give you the physical states, the states in this conformal field theory that correspond to physical string states. All right. So this Gauss system, presumably it comes from the gauge fixing of some local symmetries on the worksheet. And, well, in the Ramon-Neuwirth-Schwarz formalism, it's well known what it is. But when you embed your space-time into a superspace, generically, you will have new local symmetries on the worksheet, typically kappa symmetry. And that is quite difficult to gauge fix, actually. As far as I know, nobody knows how to do it. So the best we have at that point is, this ghost system has been more or less guessed in some superspaces. And this is, for example, the case in, the pure spinner formalism, and also the hybrid formalism. So all these formalisms correspond to different superspace, to different number of dimension and different number of supercharges in space-time. So what these formalisms tells you is what is the ghost system you have to add, and also what are the constraints that will give you the physical states of the string. But what I will talk about is only this system, actually. So if you want to really quantize string theory in such background, you have to take into account everything. But first, maybe it's a good idea to understand this system first. So that's what I will try to do. Okay. So I explained why we consider nonlinear sigma model and superspaces. Now we will focus on cases for which the superspace is actually the manifold of a supergroup. So let me say a few words about that. We want to study string theory on anti de Sitter backgrounds, and the anti de Sitter manifold, generically, it's a group manifold or the manifold of a coset. So it's not surprising that when you embed anti de Sitter into a superspace, in some case, you will have the manifold of a supergroup. So there are some well-known examples. The most famous probably is ADS5, process 5, which is the manifold of a coset, which is the following one. And then we have also ADS3, process 3, which will be a nice example for us because it is a manifold of a supergroup, which is PSU11/2. And then you also have, there are many others. For example, ADS4 times CP3 is also the manifold of a coset. Etc. So, in the following, we will focus on the cases where space-time is a supergroup, because presumably it's a useful first step also if we want to understand what happened for the cosets. So we'll focus on supergroups, and we'll focus actually on two families of supergroups, and which are the one who appears there already. So the first family is the supergroup PSL n/n, and the second family is the supergroup OSP 2n+2/2n. And these supergroups are special because, as we will see, they have the property that they have a vanishing killing form. Sometimes you will end up with a zero dual coxeter number. And what it means, roughly speaking, is that the manifold of the supergroup will satisfy the supergravity equations of motion in space-time. So that's why they're interesting for us. Okay. And briefly, maybe it's not completely useless that I remember how these supergroups are defined so that at least everybody knows what I'm talking about. So supergroups, for us, they will be simply groups of supermatrices. So the super matrices are matrices that you can write in a block forms, where the diagonal blocks are bosonic, and the off-diagonal blocks are fermionics. All right. Now, PSLN slash M is defined such that both the matrices A and B are invertible bosonic matrices. And also the superdeterminant of the supermatrix is equal to 1. And it turns out that actually the superdeterminant is invariant under scalar multiplication of the matrix. So if you multiply the matrix by a scalar, the superdeterminant doesn't change. So you can identify a matrix with any multiple of the same matrix. So what you get in the end is this group. And because you did this identification, it's not really a group of supermatrices anymore, but it's more a group of equivalence classes of supermatrices. All right, but it doesn't change anything, actually. All right, the second family is easily defined. You just have to require that these matrices be in SO 2n plus 2, and the other bosonic matrices be in SP2n. So these are the supergroups we will consider. Yes, these are, well, you have fermionic numbers there. So you can see that if you set these fermionic matrices to zero, what you end up is with matrices that are typically in the groups you're used to. So for example, for this group, if you set that and that to zero, then you get SU1, 1 there and SU2 there. So this is, if you want, ADS, and this is the sphere, just to get an intuition of what we're talking about. Okay, now let me define actually the two-dimensional theory we are going to study. So what is relevant for string theory, as I say, is the nonlinear sigma model on the superspace. So we'll define this model in the following way. The action will be the sum of two terms. One that we'll call the kinetic term, and another one that we'll call the Wesomino term. So the kinetic term is nothing fancy. This is just normalization of the coupling constant, if you want. And you take the super trace of this combination. So G is a field that takes value into the supergroup. All right. And then we have this more complicated Wesomino term, which we define like that. So it is defined on a three-dimensional manifold, such that the boundary of this manifold is the worksheet. All right, and so then it's the supertrace of something like that, precisely. Okay. Maybe you have seen this term before. So it's a bit weird to define it on a three-dimensional manifold, which is not directly the worksheet. But actually, you can see that, well, you can show at least that if this number k is an integer, then the exponential of this term does not depend on the choice of b. So the path integral is well defined. Okay? Even if the action depends on b, the theory does not in the end. Okay. There is another remark that I would like to do at that point, which is that so this field G takes value in the supergroup. So it has both, if you want, bosonic and fermionic degrees of freedom. In particular, this term gives a kinetic term both for the bosonic degrees of freedom, but also for the fermionic degrees of freedom. And a kinetic term for the fermionic degrees of freedom typically is going to break kappa symmetry. So it means that I'm really talking about pure spinor approach to superstring, right? What I'm going to say is not directly, at least, applicable to the Green-Schwarz string in which kappa symmetry is not gauge fixed. Okay, so our models has two parameters. Which are the coupling constant that appear in front of each term, right? F square and k. So k is an integer, but f square can be any real number, positive real number. And well, it's well known that if we take k equal to plus of minus 1 over f square, then we have a Wesemir-Witten model. And such a model actually is conformal for any group. And they have provided nice example of string vacua. And it's nice to, well, there are string vacua in which we can compute many things. But for us, what is very interesting is that for our particular choice of supergroup, I'm going to take some colors. So for this choice of supergroup, the theory is actually conformal for any choice of these parameters. All right, so the only restriction is that actually k squared should be smaller or equal to 1 in absolute values so that, well, the path integral is well defined. If you violate this inequality, then the Euclidean path integral may be not bounded from below, so it's not a good idea. So it's the only restriction. But apart from that, the theory is conformal. So the moduli space looks like that. There I will draw a k, and there I will draw 1 over f squared. And you have this line, which is k equal 1 over f square. And there, k equal minus 1 over f square. And where did I put the chalk? So the theory is conformal over this moduli space. And we have special points there, which are the Wesemir-Witten points. So to get an intuition about what this moduli space represent for us, at least in string theory, so it's good to work with, at least we can keep in mind this example. So so which ADS request S3, which corresponds to PSU 1,1/2 as a supergroup. And well, this background in string theory, roughly speaking, it has two parameters, which corresponds to the amount of NSNS and Ramon-Ramon fluxes. All right, the space-time is curved, so if you want it to be a solution, you need to support it by some fluxes, and you can choose either to put Neuber-Schwarz or Ramon-Ramon fluxes or any combination of both. All right. And these two parameters, they will correspond, they will match the two parameters that we have on this moduli space. So, precisely, this quantized number k is going to be the amount of Neuber-Schwarz fluxes. All right, so you can also understand why it is quantized, because the worksheet couples to these fluxes, so the fluxes has to be quantized, even from the worksheet. And then the second parameter, 1 over f squared, it is nothing else but the square radius of curvature, well, the radius of this manifold. So in terms of these fluxes, it's something like the square root of the square of the Neuber-Schwarz fluxes plus the string coupling times the Ramon-Ramon fluxes square. All right. So you can see that if I set the Ramon-Ramon fluxes to zero, then I'm back to the case where I've got a Wesum-Witten model. Right? So these points on the diagram, this correspond to the case where in space-time I've got only Neuber-Schwarz fluxes. But as soon as I move in that direction, it corresponds to turning on Ramon-Ramon fluxes. So this is where the theory is getting more complicated, at least. Okay. So these Wesum-Witten points, they are quite well understood, actually. So, for example, there is a work of Maldacena and Oguri who understood the ADS3 part of this Wesum-Witten model. And then there is a work of Chomerus and his collaborator who understood how to set the work of Maldacena and Oguri into a supergroup. So we have quite a good understanding of what happens at this Wesum-Witten point. So in the following of this lecture, the philosophy will be very much start from what we know there and try to adapt the techniques that work there to understand what happens there. All right, so we'll try to use the tools that work at the Wesum-Witten points to understand the theory that corresponds to the case where we have actually Ramon-Ramon fluxes in space-time. So at the Wesum-Witten points, if we are able to solve the model, it's mostly because these models have a huge symmetry. And the symmetry is almost enough to solve the model completely, actually. So in the quantum theory, the symmetry is generated by the currents that are associated to it. And in the quantum theory, the very useful tools, at least to solve the theory, is the current algebra. So the first thing we will do to understand the theory away from the Wesum-Witten points is to compute this current algebra. So that's what I will do now. Is it clear at that point? Okay. So, move to the second part. OK. So the model has a global symmetry. So if you look at this action, it's not difficult to see that the actions are invariant under the following transformation of the field. So if I take the field G and I can multiply it either on the left or on the right by an arbitrary matrix that is into the group, and this operation leaves the action invariant. So the global symmetry is roughly GL times G right. So right now, well, in the rest of this lecture, I will mostly talk only about the left symmetry. But everything I'm going to say can be translated very straightforwardly for the right symmetry. Okay, I will just focus on that for definiteness. So the Noether procedures gives you currents associated to this symmetry. So the Noether currents. And the following one. So we have a two-dimensional theory. So the current is a vector in two dimension. And we can write current conservation like that. So I'm working in complex coordinate on the worksheet. And, well, G, the Z component of the current, I'm going to call it G. And this is, roughly speaking, nothing else than this combination with a given normalization that I call C. And the Z bar component, I will call it G bar. And this is, roughly speaking, the same with another normalization that I'll call C bar. And this normalization, C and C bar, are given in terms of the parameters of the model in the following way. All right. So you can see already that at the Wesel-Milhouten points, where Kf squared is equal to 1. This guy is equal to 0. So this component of the current disappears, and I'm left with a holomorphic current. But it's not the case anymore as soon as I move away from the Wesel-Milhouten point. So the currents are not holomorphic, neither anti-holomorphic. So this will make the analysis more complicated, actually. OK. If I lift both, all right. Thanks. Yeah. Well, presumably I will need to clean it before the end anyway. But okay. So just to set some convention, it's convenient to expand this currents on a basis of generators of the Lie algebra. So we'll write them like that. So this kappa AB is some non-degenerate metric on the supergroup. And these TB are the generators of the Lie algebra, which satisfy the usual commutation relation, where these Fs are the structure constant. All right. So this indices A, B, etc., they take value in the adjoint representation of the supergroup. And well, some of them are associated with bosonic degrees of freedom, and some of them are associated to fermionic degrees of freedom. So when I write commutators, actually, it should be anti-commutators in case in which these two generators are fermionic. But in the following, I'm not going to keep track of all the signs that may appear if you have fermionic elements. I will treat everything as if it were bosonic. And in the end, we can restore the minus sign if we want. But it doesn't really matter. So I said previously that our supergroups are interesting because they have a zero killing form. What it means is that if I take two structure constants and I make a double contraction, so if I contract two indices together, this is going to be zero. All right. This is a statement that we have a zero killing form. And this equation is actually quite powerful because well, it's not completely obvious from the action, but somehow this structure constant, what they give you are the interaction vertices in your theory. So the fact that when you contract them together, you get zero, it tells you something like the loops are going to cancel. So it's not exactly that, but at least some loops are going to cancel in this theory, not enough to make the theory completely free, but enough to make computation much easier, at least in the theory. So, well, we will use this equation many times. Okay. So,
when you use the metric that we usually, when you decompose some elements of a vector space on the basis, you don't need to have a metric.
Yes. Well, I could write it like that if you want, without that. But I will raise and lower indices in the following a lot, so it's nice to introduce a metric anyway. And also, we'll need it in the current algebra, actually. So,
how is it defined? Does it involve the whole structure?
Yeah.
J should really have its index downstairs. So, in order to raise the index on
you can define it as simply something like the super trace of the generators. You can say that KAB is something like, okay, and that's well, up to a normalization, I'm not sure, but it's not complicated to define it. It's well, usual, like you would do for any groups. Except that for a regular group, say, you will find that this combination is proportional to this metric, and the proportionality factor is the dual Coxeter number, which vanishes for our group. Right. So this is what. Yes, yes.
Form which is invariant under the action of the left and the right.
Exactly.
So I guess this cannot be done in this case.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty usual. So I'm a bit reluctant to write something like that because, as I said, PSLN slash N is not really a group of matrices but a group of equivalent places. So you have to be careful when you write something like that. But at least philosophically, that's what it is. It's not.
Why? It's still a group, so it has
yes.
The algebra, so it's
it has not fundamental. It has no fundamental representation. For example, the smallest representation is the adjoint representation. So you cannot use all the intuition that you would get sometimes. But
do you use just the adjoint representation, for example, to define this?
Yes, that's more or less what we do.
So,
What is my fundamental representation? PSLN/N. Well, then it will not be a representation of the if you take a vector with four components, you will get a representation of SLN slash N, but not PSLN slash N. So, well, but this is a subtlety, but at the end of the day, it doesn't make anything. It's not going to work. Well, this is a group theory statement. I don't even think I know how to prove it, but it's just like that. Okay. But, well, as I said, we don't have to worry about this. It's not going to change anything. What is explained in the work of Schomerus and his collaborator, for example, is that you can define these sigma models on SLN slash N instead of PSLN slash N, and the additional U1 will simply decouple without anything that you have to do. So we can say that we work with SLN slash N, and then you can use all the tools you want. Okay. So, as I said, the tool we're trying to build to study this theory is the current algebra. Current algebra, I mean the current OPs. So this is what I would like to construct now. So we want to study things like that, right? Or something, but of course now we also have the Z bar component that we have to include into this algebra. So we have not one but three OPs that we want to compute. All right. So before we start some actual computation, we can think a little bit about what we can find on the right-hand side of these OPs. This will make our life a little bit simpler. So first, the first remark is that, well, if you are used with a Wesel-Minowitan model, you will say that, okay, you will have singularities and the dependence on the coordinate will be something like so poles, so double poles, simple pole, and if these guys were holomorphic, this is pretty much it. Then you have only regular terms, right? But now that they are not holomorphic anymore, you can have also something like that. Actually, since you're allowed to put anti-holomorphic guys at the numerator, there can be an infinite number of singular terms in these OPs. And that is what will make our life much more complicated, actually. Because, well, there is an infinite number of singularities. Actually, there can even be logarithms that appear in these OPs, because these theories are known to be logarithmic conformal field theories. So, well, logarithms will have to appear at some point. And indeed, they will. OK, so that's first for the coordinate dependence. Now, we may ask which operators we may find on the right-hand side. So if you look at the action that I just erased, actually, sorry, the action can be written in terms of these currents. So presumably, if you bring currents together, all you can generate is currents. OK, so what you can find there is typically the identity operator. Then you can find some current, so either the Z or the Z bar component of the current. I will put a C. But then you can find also more complicated stuff like component, well, two currents, for example, etc. And you can have a composite of as many currents as you want, actually. OK. The thing is that this current has a positive conformal dimension. So if you have, if you add more and more currents, actually this term will be less and less singular. Okay, so the most singular terms are these ones, and then this all these terms that will corresponds to the infinite number of singular terms that are more and more regular in a way. So, so if we want to do something, it's very difficult to keep track of all the terms. So what we will do actually is to truncate this OPE at a given level, and we'll work with truncated OPEs. So typically, what we did, we computed the current algebra up to this level, so included terms that are, say, of order zero in the distance, but that may be singular nevertheless. So that is our current knowledge of GOPs, but presumably we can go further.
Although the J is not holomorphic,
yes.
D of J is, or D bar?
Why?
So D of J bar is
holomorphic. D of J bar.
So if I hit that again with D bar, then I find that D bar of D J bar is zero.
I'm not sure I understand why. If you D bar of the D J bar, you get D bar of J is minus one.
Yes, and that's zero.
Why? It's not an exterior derivative. It's a derivative with respect to the z-bar component. So there's no reason why it should be zero. Unfortunately. I wish it would, but...
But it's never true. I mean, so for example, just... the normal string theory into
the
flat space, the x of e is not
normal. Yes.
But the dx of e
is
taken
up into the derivatives. Yeah, yeah. But the dx is that if you write it, if you write the free boson as a U1 with a Noetherian model, the dx is just the current. And the x is not really a field. Okay.
But still here, there's no way that you can find some.
Not that I know of. As I will explain on Friday, it turns out that even if J is not holomorphic, if you take something like that, so you take two currents and you contract them with the Killing metric, actually this guy is holomorphic and is proportional to the stress energy tensor. But it is very non-trivial that this guy is actually holomorphic. And it's quite nice that in the end it turns out to be that the stress energy tensor is holomorphic. But apart from that, there is not something simpler that I managed to build which is holomorphic. Okay? But if you find something, I will be very glad. Okay, so yes, so I was saying that we are going to truncate these OPEs at some point, because else we don't know what to do with it. And it may be a bit worrying, because truncating OPEs, it's not consistent usually, right? But at the case at hand, actually, there is an observation which is very nice, which is that if you look at the numerical coefficient which will go with these guys, actually you can see that this coefficient the coefficient of such a terms goes like the coupling constant F square to the 2n minus 2. So this is the coupling constant of your theory, right? Which means that if you truncate the OPE at a given level, it corresponds to doing perturbation theory at a given level also. All right? So it means that it is consistent actually to truncate GOPs. It just means that you're going to miss some correction of higher order in the coupling constant, right? This coupling constant F is the inverse square radius, so making an expansion in this F, it corresponds to making an expansion at large radius, if you want. So it happens often in the context of ADS-CFTs. And so we computed that up to this order, so it means somehow that we're going, in some sense, up to two loops in a conformal field, well, in perturbation theory. But presumably we can go further. I will explain. Okay. So we're going to truncate these OPEs at this order, at least. Now, let's ask another question. So I have to make the indices structure work so that they match on the left and on the right. So what are the tensors that I have at my disposal to contract these indices and make it work? So there is not much, actually. The tensors that I have are this metric. That is there just to raise and lower indices, if you want. And as I said previously, all the interaction vertices in my theory, they can be wrote down in terms of this structure constant. So this is pretty much it. So the only tensors that will appear are the non-degenerate metric and the structure constant. So all the indices will have to be contracted with this guy so that the indices structure on the left and on the right match. So for example, what can I get with the identity? An obvious candidate is the non-degenerate metric. And it turns out that there is nothing else that I can put. And it's nice because, well, let's imagine that I have a tensor TAB that may be more complicated than just the metric that comes there. As I said, this tensor will have to be made of contractions of these tensors there. So if I write in a diagrammatic way, this as something like that. Okay. This tensor, I can write it as something like that. Where I have A, B, and there I've got a big blob, which is made of many contractions of this guy. Okay? But, so let's suppose there is at least one structure constant in there. So I can just pull out this leg to get something like that. And then this guy is a tensor with three indices. And actually, for the supergroups we are looking, it turns out that all such tensors have to be proportional to a structure constant. So this guy is proportional to a structure constant. But then I'm contracting it with another structure constant. And this is zero because this is beginning form, right? So any such blob is zero as soon as there is at least one structure constant inside, which means that the tensor that appears here is only the Killing metric, right? There is a very similar argument which tells you that the tensor that may appear there is only the structure constant. You cannot have something more complicated. Okay? But then, at that point here, there is no proof that something very simple appears, that you have to compute it explicitly. Okay? This kind of argument, they were made first by Dershetsky, Zhukov, and Ventrobe in a paper in 1999, I think. Okay, so we know already quite a lot about what will have, what will appear on our PE. But now we have to compute the coefficients, right? So, I will write just a bit more. So the coefficient that appears there, I will call it A0. And it depends, of course, on Z minus W. And there, I will call it A1. There, I will call it A2, A3, etc. And there, we have something similar. So it will be identity, kappa IB, B0, plus, etc. And something similar there, all right? The structure will be the same, only the coefficient will differ. Okay, so now let's face the computation of these coefficients. Actually, I know three different ways to compute them. And the first way is to compute a correlation function. So I compute two-point function, three-point functions, etc. And from this computation, I can deduce the coefficients. And actually, I think that Sujay Ashok gave a talk there something like 1 year ago. Maybe some of you saw it, I don't know. But in which he explained how to do that. But I'm not going to repeat that. So the second way to compute this coefficient is by working in conformal perturbation theory around the Wesso-Minowitten point. So we write the action as the Wesso-Minowitten action plus some small deformation. So typically, I write it like the Wesso-Minowitten action plus small epsilon times the kinetic term. And then I work in perturbation theory in epsilon. So what is nice with this method is that technically, all the computation I will do will be done at the Wesso-Minowitten point where I know a lot. All right. So this is the second way, and we can also compute the coefficients like that. And there is a third way, which I believe is very efficient and powerful. And this is the one I would like to present now. So the idea is to ask for compatibility with two equations, which are current conservation and the Maurer-Cartan equation. So current conservation, it's pretty clear that it should be satisfied in the quantum theory. The Maurer-Cartan equation, it's less obvious, but asking that the OPEs will be compatible with Maurer-Cartan equation is related to asking that the theory be integrable, actually. The Maurer-Cartan equation is required for the theory to be integrable, so this is a necessary condition for the quantum theory to be integrable. So that's what we will ask, actually. What happened in our work is that we start with this method, and we realize that our equation was compatible with this Maurer-Cartan equation. But now I would like to reverse the logic and ask in the first place that they be, and it will give a very efficient way to compute this current algebra.
Classically, the Maurer-Cartan equation are just a statement of the computational relations of the algebra, just
yes.
In the world form, right?
Yes, quite so.
So, but is your algebra going to be the same as the classical algebra, or would
I don't. I'm not sure that I understand what you mean with classical algebra.
Your current algebra.
Yes.
Just, J, J, B, F, A, B, C, J, C.
I don't know. Of course, we have lots of extra terms. Yeah. Yeah. We have. But for example, we have this second order pole, and we have an infinite number of corrections.
Yeah.
Okay, I will make it clear in a second, all right? Okay, probably I should hurry a little bit because I'm a bit late. Okay, so first let me say a word about current conservation. So the equation of current conservation is the following. And demanding that the current algebra be compatible with this equation is simply demanding that if I take the OP between a current with this guy, I should find zero, right? Actually, it's just a little bit more subtle, because it turns out that in this OP, there might be contact terms, and they will play a very important role. Okay, so how do I estimate these contact terms? It comes basically from the word identity for the currents. So I will just sketch the computation. So you ask, I will write down the word identity for a current, which is simply that okay, under this infinitesimal redefinition of my field, the variation of the current should be the current times the variation of the action. Okay? This is the usual word identity. So the variation of the action, it's not surprising that it is the equation of motion. So with the correct normalization, it is just something like that. All right. And now to get the variation of the current, I just have to plug that into the definition of the current, which is there. And I can write it as an integral to match both sides. And what I get is the following. So it's the integral. So I've got the first term, which is minus C kappa AB, holomorphic derivative of a delta function. And the second one, which is BAC, the current, and the delta function. Right, sorry about the writing. So this is my wild identity. This should hold for any epsilon. So I can remove the integrals, and I obtain the following equation, which is that, so this is C, so C kappa AB, holomorphic derivative of the delta function, plus I F ABC, the current times the delta function, should be equal to that guy. When I take the OP with this one. All right, so you see that I got the contact terms in my previous equation like that. Okay. Now let me say a word about this Maurer-Cartan equation. So usually we write it like that, so dg minus 1 equals dg g minus 1, weight dg T minus one. Well, now I'm really using exterior derivatives acting on one front, right? But if I write it in terms of my currents, which are there, I get the following equation. So it's d bar g a of z minus c d g bar a of z minus a f a dc gc g bar d of z equal to 0. All right. So demanding that the current algebra be compatible with the Maurer-Cartan equation is demanding that when I take the OPE of this Maurer-Cartan equation with the current, I get 0. Does it answer your question? Okay. So I demand that it is 0 even for the contact terms, actually. And that is not completely trivial. But the reason that this Maurer-Cartan equation is a kinetic equation, it does not depend on the action, right? And if there were contact terms there, then if I deform the action, it will imply that there will be actual non-zero contribution once I've deformed the theory. Right? It means that on my moduli space, if there were contact terms at some point between the Maurer-Cartan equation and the current, then at another point there will be actual non-zero terms. Okay, so that I don't want. So even the contact term should cancel in this equation. Okay. And now the claim is that these two equations, they fix the current algebra completely. So just to show you how it works in practice, I can compute, for example, I will compute explicitly the first terms there and there, just to show how it works. And then we can do it for the whole algebra. What you do is that you make an ansatz, you plug it into here you plug it into the right-hand side. There you plug it to the left-hand side, and you just solve the equation, and it gives you the coefficients. Right? So you don't have to compute any Feynman diagrams or anything. It's quite straightforward. So let me show you how it works for computing that guy and that guy, for example. So what I do is that I put this and that there. So what I find, so this is a computation. So I'm only interested into the terms that multiply the identity operator, right? So I will only take this guy, which multiplies the identity operator on the left-hand side. So I got C kappa IB derivative of the delta function. And on the right-hand side, if I plug down that, I just get kappa IB with the anti-holomorphic derivative of A naught plus the holomorphic derivative of B naught. Right? It's simply just plug that into the right-hand side. So this is current conservation. And the Maurer-Cartan equation, it will give you something very similar. So I've got nothing on the right-hand side. And on the left-hand side, I will get from that term, so kappa IB, C bar D bar of A naught, minus from that term C D of B naught. And that term is not going to contribute, all right, because there is one structure constant. So from this same argument, as soon as you have one structure constant, you cannot get something that is proportional to, well, the Killing metric. So this is it. No, I can multiply this line by C and add the 2 so that I eliminate B naught. And what I get is that C square kappa IB derivative of the delta function is equal to kappa IB C plus C bar, anti-holomorphic derivative of I naught. So just have to integrate that. So the integration, I forgot a factor of 2 pi actually. Sorry about that. There should be a 2 pi there. Not so there. Well, sorry, it doesn't matter. But the thing is that 2 pi times the delta function, this is also the anti-holomorphic derivative of 1 over z minus w. Maybe you know this formula. So with that, you can simply integrate. And you find that a naught is minus c squared over c plus c bar, 1 over z minus w squared. All right? So you find this coefficient. And you find that it is a double pole. So this is what you expect, right, from this structure. And as you can see, it's quite efficient. And you can compute all the other terms in the same way. So it's very efficient, but I don't want you to believe that it makes the computation completely trivial, because there is still one subtle point in the computation, which is to take the P between the current and this guy there. All right? For us, it was not complicated. But as soon as you go to higher order, these terms start to contribute. And sometimes it makes the computation non-trivial. All right? So there is still something, there is still some work to do with this. And already to go to second order, it's quite a long computation, actually. OK. So one more remark is that I say that if we truncate the OPs at a given order, it's a little bit like working at a given order in perturbation theory. But for these first three terms, it turns out that the computation you do are exact in perturbation theory because of this kind of argument, all right? The terms that appear there, typically they come with many structure constants. And when you have many structure constants, you cannot get something like that, which is non-zero. So, well, it's a bit unwaving at that level, but you can prove rigorously that what we compute for these three terms is exact to all order and perturbation theory. What we compute for the next term on the other end are not, it's not exact, but it's the leading terms in the expansion. All right. So, this concludes my second part. Are there any questions about this computation? So, this was about the computation of the current algebra. Now, we want to use this current algebra to understand our theory, right? This is just a mathematical tool that we want to use to do something. So, what it is that we can do? Well, we can do many things, actually. The first thing is that, like what people do usually in Wesley-Milhouton model, we can try to use this current algebra to construct the spectrum of the theory. All right, so we can study the spectrum, at least up to a certain extent. And that I have, well, many things to say, so that I will keep for Friday. The second thing that we did, well, chronologically, it was the first thing, is to see whether we can say something about what happened in space-time as soon as we do string theory. So for the case of ADS3, cosS3, it turns out that from the watch theory, we can construct some operators that live in space-time that generate the superconformal algebra. So this is very much in the spirit of the ADS-CFT correspondence, of course. So we construct operator that lives in the bulk, but that do generate super conformal algebra for a two-dimensional conformal phi theory, which would live under modern, right? So we'll just say that in a few words. Actually, at that point, at the Wesel-Minowitan points, these operators were constructed by Given, Kutasov, and Seiberg, something like 10 years ago. And what we showed was that when we move away from this Wesel-Minowitan point, if we generalize the construction of Given, Kutasov, and Seiberg using our non-chiral currents, we still get space-time operators that realize this two-dimensional superconformal algebra. So this is ADS-CFT from the worksheet, if you want. But, well, I don't have time to talk about that, so I will not say more. And there is a third direction that we looked at, which is integrability. And I must say, I don't have a lot to say. It was just we took a few preliminary steps, and that I'm going to talk about in the next 15 minutes. All right. So at that point, these three directions, they are quite orthogonal, I would say. But hopefully, if one day we are to solve completely this theory, probably this three aspects will have to play a role somewhere. All right, so now I will say something about integrability. So that would be my third part. So let me begin with classical integrability. So classical integrability comes from two equations, which are the one we use actually, which are current conservation. Let me write it down one more time. So. And the Maurer-Cartan equation. Which is the following. Right. So these two equations alone imply integrability. Indeed, you can construct a one form that you can call A, which depends on a spectral parameter lambda, which you define like that. Okay. So this one form, you call it a connection, and you compute its curvature. So it's really a one-line computation, but I will not do it on the blackboard. It's not very useful. But you find that this is zero because of these two equations. Right? So you have a one-parameter family of flat connections. So what that means is that now you can put your theory on a cylinder, for example. If I put my theory on a cylinder, I call this direction space and this direction time, then I can look at the exponential of Wilson loop around the cylinder, right? This is contour C. And the statement that the curvature of this connection is zero is the statement that this does not depend on the contour, actually. All right? So it means, in particular, that if you want to expand this guy in lambda, so you can write it 1 plus sum over n lambda puissance n qn, these qn's are conserved charges, so you have an infinite number of conserved charges. If you write them down explicitly, the first one, it's simply, well, up to normalization, it's simply the integral of the time component. So this is the Noether charge associated with the left symmetry. The second one, you have the integral of the space component plus a double integral, FABC, GB, GC. Well, now I have time. Component of the current. And it turns out that all the other non-local charges, you can generate them by just commuting these guys together. Okay? So at the classical level, integrability relies only on current conservation and the Maurer-Cartan equation. Now, what happens in the quantum theory? As I've shown, we constructed a current algebra in the quantum theory that is compatible both with the Maurer-Cartan equation and with current conservation, which means that if they exist, these charges will be conserved in the quantum theory. All right? So the only subtlety that remains is whether these charges are well-defined or not. And why should they be ill-defined? Actually, as you can see, here we have a double integral, and it may happen that these two guys will come close one to each other, right? So this may generate singular terms, and so it may create subtleties in the definition of this non-local charge.
What about contour terms in the current conservation?
They do not spoil conservation. So what we can show, actually, is that indeed we know that there are singular terms that appear when we bring these two guys together. But now we have to contract it with this Schröter constant, all right? And it turns out that all the singular terms that we computed will vanish once we contract them with this guy. So the most singular term was a term of order a double pole. So double pole, it came with the non-degenerate metric. Okay, but obviously when you contract the metric with a Schröter constant, you find zero, right? Because simply a reason of symmetry. This guy is anti-symmetric and this one is symmetric. Now the simple pole, it came with a Schröter constant. But when I perform the double contraction of Schröter constant, it gives me zero because this is a King form. And now, I told you that we computed the algebra up to poles of order zero, say. So at order zero, I did not write it down, but I can give you at least the tensor structure that appears. And the tensor structure is the following. So it's A, FBC. This is this guy that we have to contract with F, B, G, D, F, E, G, C. Okay, and now we have to take the symmetric version of this tensor when we symmetrize in D and E. Okay? And it turns out that this guy also gives you zero. So this is thanks to we have to use the Jacobi identity plus the fact that we have a zero killing form. So in a sense, um, we have shown that the potential singularity that appears there, they all vanish up to second order in perturbation theory, so up to two loops, if you want. Okay. Presumably, we can go further, but we need more computation, so we'll have to go further in the current algebra, which is a non-trivial computation. There is actually a nice observation. So, and I will finish like that, probably. So, the observation is that if I have that this combination is equal to this operator, so, well, now I have, this means normal ordering somehow, so I have removed the singularities. So this equation that we have proven of two second order in perturbation theory, it implies somehow quantum integrability of the model. And another observation is that the same equation actually also implies the holomorphicity of the stress tensor. So it's quite nice actually that quantum integrability is tied with conformal invariance of this model. And it's a bit subtle also because in both cases it implies, but it's not strictly required in a sense. But still it is enough. So it would be nice if we would be able to prove this identity to all order in perturbation theory. Maybe we will manage that, I don't know. Okay, so I think I will stop there. On Friday, I will talk about that. So how we can use this current algebra to compute at least partially the spectrum of this theory. Thanks.